Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. And I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy, live from Las Vegas.
Oh. Imagine.
How you doing? How's Las Vegas, man?
Oh, it's been fun. Beautiful weather down here, 23 degrees today. Sky is like totally blue. The moon is like almost overhead in the sky, like way higher than you'd ever see in Edmonton. And just gorgeous in that respect. And we're ensconced in the 4,004 suite area resort and casino. Just a huge, huge building. It's like a cruise ship only on land, you know. And it's a different experience for me. Never been here before. Don't know that I'll be back, but it's fun to be here once.
What was the arena like? What was the fan experience like, Bruce? We're going to do the two good things, two bad things, two numbers podcast, and your good thing is being.
That's going to be my good thing.
Terrible. That was just a terrible, ghastly, no good, horrible, head smashing, boring, terrible, rotten, gross game. From an Oilers fan perspective.
Yeah, they could have played better for our trip. But, you know, the schedule stacked against him a little bit. But I have to admit I got a little down during the third period. But the overall experience was great fun. First of all, Air Canada that sponsored the event and brought a bunch of people down that won contests or weaseled their way in, that got their foot in the door one way or another. And they treated us like gold. And gave us some swag, nice new orange Oilers jersey I'm wearing that, courtesy of them. And
who's the number?
No number on it yet, and I'm not sure there will be, but I'm not necessarily even a huge fan of the orange, but I am a fan of free swag. So, anyways, we have had a fine time here in Vegas, but tonight, just going to the game, we went down a few hours early, and they had we had a pregame get together with down at ice level at the players' bench. Ken Hitchcock came out and chatted with us for a few minutes, and so that was kind of cool. And then we just kind of chilled outside the arena. They didn't actually reopen the doors until a couple hours later. So we just sat outside, and they have a tailgate party out there, and there was like probably 2,000 people milling about, lining up to get in, or just, you know, they had DJs, they had cheerleaders dancing, they had four or five these drive up kind of, you know, Fat Franks sort of concession stands just set up on the spot. And of course, it's a lot easier to do a tailgate party in plus 23 than it is in minus 23. But maybe at such time as the Oilers ever get back in the playoffs, that might be a sort of thing that would be fun. And just the fan experience in general, like they go all in on the pregame show. The anthem singer, fantastic. That's another story, but it was really a pleasure just to be in the barn. And fans are very exuberant. I would say that the building was easily two or three times as loud as Edmonton, and maybe 50 times as loud as Edmonton would have been if this game had been in Edmonton tonight. The place would have been as quiet as church mice. But they were loud. They're a little, you know, not too wise in the ways of, you know, standing up in front of other people and blocking the view and stuff. Like, there's more of a kind of a, I guess, football atmosphere, but it was a lot of fun, and they have a good time. So no question about that, and very sort of interactive with the visiting fans. Like, we didn't get any grief really. We had just, you know, a nice back and forth with people, and so all that was all that I'll file under my good thing and this experience. After all my probably 750 NHL games that I've seen in Canada, this was my first one in the United States, and deep in the heart of enemy territory. And unfortunately, the result turned out as always when it comes to the Oilers these days.
You know, the first game I went to in the States, Bruce, was a World Hockey Association game in San Diego.
Wow.
Yes, about 1970.
The Mariners, eh?
Yeah, the Mariners.
André Lacroix.
I can't remember any of their players, honestly.
André Lacroix, and the there's my mandatory 70s sports reference. He was a dynamite scorer in the NHL. He was the
Sam Gagne of his day.
Slow, but boy, could he make a pass.
Yeah, he really could. My good thing, Bruce, is like the game's over. I'm glad it's over. Yeah. I can't wait for this season to be over now. The Oilers are done, officially out of it, I think. And my bad thing is going to be, we've remarked on this before, Bruce, the issues with Mikko Koskinen's glove hand.
Yeah.
But Vegas must have had a scouting report. They beat him three times
with
glove hand. And once Cody Eakingle came charging down there and it was the only grade A shot of the three. The other two were grade B shots that beat him glove hand. Eakin's shot was grade A, but Koskinen didn't even have his hand up. Yeah. He wasn't even, you know, good to go. He was just, and then this is the most worrisome thing about Mikko Koskinen. Is this proclivity to let in crap goals on his glove hand? And wow, if he doesn't, what is he? He's 30.
Yep.
And he's still letting in goals like that.
Yep.
Oh God.
Well, he the one in the last minute of the first, that hurt. But like you say, at least it was a grade A shot. Then early in the second, Oilers tie it up at 2-2, and you think maybe they got some life and they've kind of stabilized this game for a bit. And then, I don't know who the guy was, he came down, it was a 3-on-2, I think McDavid maybe coughed the puck up, and he hustled back to take one guy out. But it was the guy shot from, like, top of the faceoff circle, and Koskinen, I guess, maybe he guessed he was going to pass because he pulled off the short side post, and bam, you know, I mean, there should be no space there at all, short side. Right in over the glove.
Yeah, I had
that was a killer goal. Killer goal.
It really was.
Even a 3-2. Even a 3-2, it felt like ooh. And then another one 4-2 early in the third, and it was like I think Cassian was the guy who made that bad cross ice pass that time. But I mean, the shot was from well out. You just need to have a save there, man. Just need a save once in a while.
Oh God, so clearly, like. There's a new number one priority, Bruce, for the summer. Whatever else you want, they got to bring in a goalie to challenge Koskinen. Like, we've seen enough of this particular foible and enough iffy games. Like, he's had some good games, but man, they've got to bring someone. Now, maybe Shane Starrett, if he goes on a huge playoff run here, will really make a mark as someone who should challenge for an NHL job, but I don't know what they're going to do, but big time about this whole thing, and I'm not. These are terrible goals against. These are ghastly goals against.
It reminds me of the situation in Dallas about maybe 3 years ago when they had two giant Finns, each making about $4.5 or $5 million a year. Carey Lehtinen and the big guy, Antti Niemi.
Yeah,
Montreal now. And they were both like big money goalies, and they had this huge goaltending budget, and they also had this huge goaltending problem because neither one of them was particularly reliable. It feels like the Oilers have got sort of the first half of that tandem. They got a huge Finn with a $4.5 million contract that isn't overly reliable. He's had a lot of good games, you know, but when he has a bad game, he stinks. Yeah. Like, this is the third time in the last 10 games that he's let in 6 goals. Basically, every other game, it's been 2 or less. It's just, you know, it's feast and famine with this guy.
When he looks bad, it's not Jonas Gustafsson bad. Like, he's not, he's not in the corner when they score a goal.
There was one play like that tonight that was a full-fledged flopping fiasco. But
he's close. He's close to being that ugly. Like, when he plays bad, it's just so horrendous. It's just Oh, God. I mean, Talbot, when he looked good or bad, it was kind of almost when he hard to tell the difference. He was playing the same style. He would just let them in when he was playing bad, which he did for 2 years in a row. And there wasn't much of a visual difference, though, other than they were just scoring on him. But with Koskinen, when he's good, he looks like a different goalie. And when he's bad, it's just like, oh, God. Can't make a save, buddy. You're just flopping around.
Back-to-back nights for him, too. And I think that really showed on the whole team tonight. Like,
you're right.
Without having seen the game last night, but knowing how important it was, the impression I got, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the Oilers probably put in a pretty supreme effort last night. And there just wasn't a lot of gas. There wasn't a lot of gas in the tank tonight. And that was from the netminder right on out. So my bad thing, I'm going to step up one notch and go to the defenders. We had just great seats. Top row of the lower bowl in the section directly behind the Oilers' defensive net. And we were just looking straight up the ice, just a beautiful view. And as an old goalie, I always loved the seats behind the goalie anyway. But from that vantage point, I had the great opportunity to watch the Oilers' defensemen and their wonderful breakout passing for two of the three periods. And you know what? If they made a pass in this game, I frankly do not remember it. It was like D to D, maybe, make a pass. Any kind of forward pass over the Oilers' blue line from back end was just a prayer. It was just sort of in the general area in somebody's skates. It was an icing. It was picked off. And it was never, ever crisp. Like there was nothing. There was no flow to the game. And a big part of the missing flow. And I'm not gonna leave the forwards without blame, because there were some pretty sloppy plays by the forwards as well. But the defense, there was just nothing. There was zero in the way of let's get the puck moving north with purpose. And until they solve that, I mean, that's as big a problem to me as any issue between the pipes, because it's the whole six-pack. I mean, the pair of Nurse and Russell in particular, all they can seem to do in their own end is ring a pass around the boards to the other team's defensemen on the blue line.
They are just terrible together.
Yeah, it's brutal.
And they have been for some time, and we've been talking about this for a while.
Yeah.
They cannot be a partnership. They are not. They do not work at all. And
well, who's going to pass the puck? I mean, neither one of them. I mean, Nurse had nothing tonight. Like he had a really good game
the previous game. Yeah,
that may well be so, but tonight he wasn't involved in the play. I don't know if he had a shot or shot attempt or anything. He was just defending, and his offensive game had nothing going on, and they were stuck in their own end for seemed like a lot. I haven't actually looked at all the stats yet, but I saw what I saw, and the eye test was a fail for the boys tonight.
Yeah, let me just check with Nurse and Russell. Nurse had it. Yeah. Three major mistakes on scoring chances against
from the Oilers.
So that's plenty. Yeah, like they got to figure out a way to move Russell this summer, Bruce. And it's not going to be that easy. They got to figure out a way to do it. And let's, you know, there's all this talk about the Oilers. Well, I was hearing Brian Burke the other night. They got to bring in like a scoring winger or top D man to run the power play, a scoring winger. Like these things are not going to happen, I don't think. The Oilers don't have the cap space or necessarily the assets. But this team is going to improve when these players on the farm team step up and step into roles and you know, Ethan Bear is getting healthy and is playing better. Caleb Jones is down there. William Loggison's down there. Evan Bouchard's coming in. Like that's what it's going to take is these guys to, you know, maybe they get two of them next year, but they've got to move out at least. They got to move out at least one of the six defensemen.
Maybe two
Great. Of them. Maybe Benning and although Benning's been getting shots on net, at least maybe Benning and Russell.
Yeah,
at least Sekera can make a pass. He's starting to struggle a little bit.
Not tonight, he didn't.
Yeah,
I didn't tonight. See anybody making a pass tonight. Honestly,
yeah, Klefbom and Sekera have been struggling. They think they just need way better fluency in terms of passing that puck, way better skill, and they need to upgrade their skill level. So, you know, we know both Jones and Bear can make a pass. We know Evan Bouchard can make a pass. Yeah. And so I don't actually see the Oilers being able to maybe a different kind of management structure will stop giving away the Gustafsons, yeah, and the Osterleys and the Petries and the Schultzes and, you know, guys who could make a pass. Mm-hmm. And but they can start with Caleb Jones, holding on to Caleb Jones and giving him a shot next year and moving out some of this dead wood. So, and I'm not saying Chris Russell can't play in the NHL. He can. He's a decent NHL
player. No, you just need more balance in the unit, in the group.
Can't partner him with Darnell Nurse. Yeah. Like, you can't partner two players like that who struggle to move the puck together. It's just brutal. It's like Smead and Stas all over again. I remember that. Passing the puck. They'd start at the center red line and they'd slowly pass their way back until they were behind the net.
And then ring it around the boards.
And cough it up the middle of the ice. What's your number?
My number is 7. And that's the number of points Oilers are out of the 8th and last playoff spot with other teams in between. 10 games to go. On the weekend, they had a chance. Like, they were 8 back. If they won outright last night, it was 6. If they won their game in hand tonight, it was 4. They did win last night, but in overtime, so they only gained 1 point. And then they didn't do anything with the game in hand tonight. So really, you know, they gained 1 point on Phoenix by playing one extra game than Arizona, and they're no further ahead. And there's 10 games left, and it's just 7 points is a mountain. There's no, I don't think there's any way at this point. And I've been trying to be optimistic that, you know, you go on a run, but where's the run?
I lost optimism when, you know, honestly, I just, you know, I've been, mm-hmm, the minority unpopular position that I've had is you're not going to win. You're not going to go on a significant run at the end of the year with the forward group that they have. They need to score more. They need more talent. Now they, mm-hmm, decided maybe they're right, like, to keep Marody and Benson down there. I would have brought him up in a second and tried to win some games with a bit more skill.
And Joe G looked pretty good tonight. I liked him in this limited time.
Good
work on the forecheck and a real gutsy shot block.
Yeah.
I was sitting right behind that. He really sold out on that one and paid the price.
Why Reeder's playing? I mean, the last two games, we've got me and Lucic on the top line with Connor McDavid. These things are just like, it just makes my head hurt, and it's made me lose faith in Hitchcock as a coach. Like, just no way should he come back. You know, this heavy hockey obsession, which is continuing with Cassian and Lucic with Connor McDavid. Are you kidding me? Like, it's just, that's just a painful. When I read that tweet from Bob Stauffer, I just felt like smashing my head.
That reminds me of the 17-year-old Wayne Gretzky getting put on a line with Ace Bailey and Dave Semenko. There at least was a purpose to that. Nobody was going to mess with Gretzky, and that was Sather's whole point. But this deal just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. You need some skill on one of the wings. You know, at least one of the wings got to have a bit of high-end skill, and you know,
yeah,
those guys can plumb the puck into the net very occasionally, but high-end skill is not the word you'd use to describe either of those fellas.
My wife's just home from work. She's working late tonight. We're doing the podcast. Hey, Lily, good to see you. So Bruce, my number is 5.
Mm-hmm.
That's the number of grade A scoring chances the Oilers had this game.
Mm-hmm.
Not win. Come on, it's just not going to happen.
Well, 19, like,
were they trying? I know there was a lot of resistance. Like, there was a ton of resistance to this idea of bringing up Benson and Marody.
Mm-hmm.
None of it made sense to me, honestly. Like, seriously, didn't make any sense. It's like, well, they need to go on this playoff run. Well, they could go on. You can call them up, see how they do, and still go on the playoff run. It's like, well, you don't want to repeat the past mistakes. Hey, these guys aren't 18 and 19. They're not even 20. Benson turned 21. He's had a full year in the AHL. Marody's had a full year. They're mm-hmm. kicking it down there. They're putting up points. There was no reason, I don't think. And if Gretzky was in on this, Gretzky, that's a big strike against him as far as I'm concerned. It was a terrible decision not to give that a try when you have Toby Reeder playing still, Bruce.
Still playing.
So I'm, you know, I don't think it was a good call at all. And I know, like, the majority of fans, they go, well, you can't tamper with Bakersfield. The point of the of pro hockey isn't for Bakersfield to win. It's for the Oilers to win. It's for Bakersfield to develop players who are good enough to play on the Oilers. You are good enough to play on the Oilers once you dominate play in the AHL. Those guys were doing that.
Oh, they're starting to do it for sure. They're 3-4 in the AHL in rookie scoring, your two guys there. And Benson, in fact, is only 1 point behind the league leader because his two guys are 56. He's at 55. He's in the top 20 of AHL scorers now, Tyler Benson. Like, he's really coming on. And, I mean, this full season down there, for all that some people are chomping at the bit to get him up here, I think that the full season down there is going to stand him in good stead, as the old saying goes. And I think he'll be ready. I'm hoping he'll be ready right from the start of next year. He'll have his 1 year, and now he's ready to, you know, he's done his apprenticeship.
There's nothing magical about this full season thing. Like, I agree. Like, 45 games, that was really good. But
better that than what they did with Jesse Puljujärvi and the yo-yo and the bungee whatever they've had him on. Puljujärvi
was 18. Yeah, Benson's not 18, okay? Like, most forwards make it in the NHL. They're not in the AHL mm-hmm. for 2 years. Maybe mm-hmm. one. You know, that's plenty. And I don't know. I just think the people are a little bit superstitious. And they've been burned by the Oilers' development model, which is mm-hmm. admittedly horrible. But this, this isn't that. It was time to give these guys a chance, and I think they blew an opportunity to maybe get something more out of this season. Probably not, but call them up for 5 games. Would it really kill them? Would it really kill? Benson would see what the NHL's like. He'd be thrilled to death to be in the NHL. He'd get a taste of it. He'd see where he needs to improve his game, and maybe, just maybe, he would have helped the team win. So I'm sticking with my argument, and it's okay. I'm getting firmer on it, Bruce.
I'm bullish on the player.
Yes.
And I'm delighted to see him improving. I mean, he had 4 points last night. He's just getting more and more.
He's scoring more.
Confidence, get more goals. Like, for a long time, he had like a very tiny number of goals and a lot of assists. Well, he's up to 13 goals now, which isn't terrific, but I'm sure if he did splits for, you know, the first half of the season to the second half, he's probably had, you know, 3/4 of his goals in the second half of the season, and he's still piling in the assists left and right.
All right. Hey, let's leave it there, Bruce. You're in Vegas, so I'm not going to take one more second of your time. So
I am. It's fun, yeah, but I might as well have a first-time report from a road game. We don't get to do this every day, so it's kind of fun to do it. I hope the quality of the mic is good enough. I'm just using sort of my remote computer. I think the picture's okay. I mean, given what the picture is of.
Yeah, you look good, man. You got the sweater on. Your hair is nicely coiffed.
Uh-huh. So, all right.
You got the Vegas look.
I haven't pulled it out yet, eh?
Yeah.
And I don't want to talk. Want to avoid me doing that, do not bring up the goalie interference play. And we'll just let that slide. And we will thank everyone for listening.
I think it slid. I think it was going in before Koskinen got hit. Anyway, I can't say for sure, but maybe I'm just a little down on Koskinen tonight. Okay, Bruce, thanks for talking.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast. And Bruce, just let me say, it was great to have you back. I had to do the podcast alone last night, and mm-hmm. I'm just terrible on my own. Like, I just...
That's tough, isn't it? Like, it's way more easy and fun to have a conversation than to do the monologue. So
yeah, you just feel like you're talking.
I'm happy to chip in tonight, even from long distance. What the hell?
Thanks again.
Yeah, no worries. Good night, everyone.